This is World Cafe. I'm Rena Duris. You know that feeling when you get together with an old friend and it's like nothing has changed? It's fun, it's comfortable, you can still tell each other anything. That's kind of what it's like listening to the old 97s. Not only are they old friends of the World Cafe, they've been together for 27 years, consistently putting out music with the same lineup of members. They've just released their new album, 12th, which is, you guessed it, their 12th record. And today, old 97s frontman Rhett Miller joins me to talk about how they kept it together through all the ups and downs, including his own decision to get sober about 5 years ago. You'll also hear Rhett perform songs, both new and old, in front of a live virtual audience, beginning with this one from 12th. It's called Turn Off the TV, the old 97s on World Cafe.
They're running a marathon of kids in the hall. Ghost light dancing across the posters on the wall. Two little pixies and the slide of T-Rex. I can tell that we get along well and I wonder what's next. Turn off the TV, let's go back to my room. I've got a window with a hell of a view. And there's a full moon sitting on the church next door. Sleeping bag on a hardwood floor. Turn off the TV, let's go back to my room. Woo! Never thought that a girl like you would pay me no mind. Here we are in a hot box having a hell of a time. Jim Beam and brickweed and a futon couch. And a playful smile pulling on the corner of your mouth. Turn off the TV, let's go back to my room. I've got a window with a hell of a view. And there's a full moon sitting on the church next door. Sleeping bag on a hardwood floor. Turn off the TV, let's go back to my room.
Recorded live for World Cafe in front of a live virtual audience. That's a new one from Old 97s called Turn Off the TV from their new album, 12th. 12th. I feel like I'm going to have a hard time saying that throughout this whole interview. 12th. Rhett Miller of Old 97s is my guest today on the show. And we can see, the people who are kind of watching this live can see what it looks like. But maybe you could describe for radio listeners, where exactly are you at the moment?
Well, it's funny. I have two teenage kids, a 14-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old son. And when I built this room out of the corner of my overly large garage, because contrary to popular belief, I'm not like some supermanly He-Man woodworker type of guy. I didn't need all of this space. I'm not rebuilding engines in here. So I built this, you know, 10-foot by 14-foot room, and I painted the walls red, which my kids teased me mercilessly about. They're, why are you painting your room red? It's so stupid. And then I hung up guitars all around the walls. And my, you know, my kids were like, oh, Dad, look at you trying to flex on everybody. And I went around trying to make this room a place that felt really inspiring and musical and creative. And then when suddenly my entire job, the way I'm feeding my kids and paying my mortgage, is sitting in this IKEA desk chair in this office that I built and decorated myself. And suddenly it looks, you know, not to toot my own horn, it looks better than most people's, you know, Zoom setup. And now I'm like, hey, who's the dummy now, kids? Me. Wait, you. I don't know. Somebody's the dummy. We're all dummies now.
I mean, I would never know that was a garage if you didn't tell me. So I would say, well done.
Thanks.
This is World Cafe. I'm Rena Duris. I'm speaking to Rhett Miller of the Old 97s today on World Cafe about their new album, 12th. The song we're going to hear you perform for us next is a new one from that album called Belmont Hotel. And it is a real place. Could you tell us about the Belmont Hotel?
So the old Belmont Hotel is was originally a motor court type hotel in the Oak Cliff neighborhood of Dallas in South Dallas. My grandfather, whom I've written about extensively in Sports Illustrated, was a real character. In 1952, he bought an NFL franchise and and lost the family fortune that he'd been born into by trying to bring NFL football to Dallas, which you would never think that that would be a losing proposition. But he was 3 years before the TV contracts came. He was sort of cursed because he had assumed that we were to a point with the racial situation in Dallas where a team with black players would be accepted, but it wasn't. And it was heartbreaking for my grandfather. My grandfather, though, like I said, he was a character. He had girlfriends, and he would go, this is an old Texas money guy. I'm not defending this at all. But he would take girlfriends to this old motor court, the Belmont Hotel. And the Belmont Hotel then went into, I only provide that as a weird historical footnote. The Belmont Hotel fell into disrepair. Nobody owned it for a long time. It was just a place where vagrants and junkies and garbage collected there. And then a group of investors came along and decided that they were going to turn this back into a thing. And they decided they wanted it to have a rock and roll feeling. So they would invite folks like me to stay there for good rates. I know Alejandro Escovedo, who's appeared on World Cafe, he lived there. He may still live there now, but for years he's lived there. And it's so beautiful now. So I was there one day, and I was in a room with a view of all of downtown Dallas skyline. And it was the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge, which is really beautiful. And I felt kind of grateful for the weird perks that my job offers. And my job no longer offers the brass ring of, you know, massive wealth. That's fine. Like, that's not why I got into it to begin with. But it does offer perks up and down the line. And staying at the Belmont Hotel for a super good rate is one of them. And I felt just kind of grateful. And I also started thinking about the metaphor that is the Belmont Hotel, something that was once beautiful, if tawdry, and went through like this fallow period and is now like once again even more beautiful than it ever was. And I thought about that as a metaphor for not just like a marriage or love relationship, but even, you know, a rock and roll band. So that day I sat down in the Belmont Hotel and I wrote this song. It's like an old folk song.
Our love is like the old Belmont Hotel. It was in ruins, now it's doing quite well. The windows were busted, big holes in the walls. Madmen and wildlife was roaming the halls. Now there's a swimming pool with two waterfalls, and it's better than brand new now. Our love is like the old Belmont Hotel. It was condemned by the town for a spell. Vagrants moved in and set fires in the rooms. Ceilings were charred and the air thick with fumes. Now there's a garden where blue bonnets bloom, and it's better than brand new now. So many times, good buildings get torn down, razed to the ground, because work is hard to do. Oh, but if you try, if you don't let a living thing die, it might wind up better than brand new. Our love is like the old Belmont Hotel, restored to the grace from which it fell. We almost gave up, but we both stayed right here. The hope we held on to was stronger than fear. Now all I can say is I love you, my dear, and we're better than brand new now. Yeah, we're better than brand new now.
Belmont Hotel performed for a live virtual World Cafe audience by Rhett Miller of the Old 97s. That song is from the new Old 97s album, 12th. So we've got to talk about the album cover for a minute. Rhett, you do know we make World Cafe in Philadelphia, home of the 2018 Super Bowl champions, the Philadelphia Eagles. So I just want to hold this up. I don't know if our audience will be able to see it on my phone, but could you explain, would you mind explaining this album cover and what we're looking at? Look, my dirty phone. Would you mind explaining this album cover and what we're looking at here?
All right. It came to me in a dream. Roger Staubach was my childhood hero, the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. Now, if you just immediately paint all Dallas Cowboys with the brush of a Philadelphia Eagles fan, hating them from, you know, start to finish for no reason whatsoever, remember that Roger Staubach is from the Midwest, Cincinnati, Ohio, the Rust Belt, maybe. He grew up there. He then served in the Navy after having won the Heisman Trophy and a great college career. He gave the best years of his athletic life to the U.S. Armed Forces, and he came back finally as a 27-year-old rookie to the Dallas Cowboys, and he led us to two Super Bowl titles. He was such an exciting player to watch. He invented the play that is known throughout American football as the Hail Mary play.
Right.
And he invented that phrase, I think, because he's a devout Catholic, despite the fact that he's like a really funny, snarky guy. I mean, when you say devout Catholic, it might make you think, oh, he's really uptight. He's not. I've gotten to be friends with him now as an adult in the last decade or so.
And wait, how did you get to be friends with him?
Well, like I said, perks. These are the perks. He's got a bunch of kids, and his son Jeff and I are pretty good friends because Jeff was a big fan of the Old 97s, and Michelle, his daughter, and I got to be friends with those guys, and they started inviting me and my family to come watch Cowboy games from the Staubach box. In fact, one of my favorite memories is looking over about 7 years ago, and Tony Romo was finally going to beat the New York Giants in the new Cowboys stadium, and he'd never beaten the Giants at home. And I look over, and my son, who was 7 years old at the time, was standing next to Roger Staubach, who, when I was my son's age, was Max was 10 years old. 10 years old at the time. When I was 10 years old, nobody was above Roger Staubach. So I look over, and there's my 10-year-old standing next to Roger Staubach. They're both kind of standing there with their arms crossed, looking cool, just the two of them. And I see Roger turn to Max and say, you know, I'm really glad Tony's finally beating the Giants. You know, I was 11-1 against the Giants. And I'm like, oh, my God, Roger Staubach's bragging to my son about his record versus the Giants. Anyway, okay. Sorry. The photograph on the cover of this album is supposed to evoke a bygone time. You know, it's like it's a grainy, beautiful, iconic photo of Roger Staubach floating, seeming to float in midair as he passes the football. I really love how wistful the photograph is or makes me feel. I think that even if Randall Cunningham perhaps is your favorite number 12 of all time, I think you can appreciate the sort of the memories that might be evoked by such a photograph.
Sure. So Keith, I was going to say, you know, when I moved to Philly last fall, one of the first things I learned, I think it was before my first day of work even, that an important part of being an Eagles fan is not being a Dallas Cowboys fan. So you weren't worried about how any of your Philly fans or fans anywhere else who might know about sports rivalries were going to respond to that.
You know, thanks to XPN and thanks to the incredibly fantastic taste of the Philadelphia music fans, we have a fan base that I think would forgive us pretty much anything. Really, more than anything, I was worried that people would look at it, and this was just a minor concern, that people would look at it and think, oh, this is a record by jocks, or it's about sports, or something like that. But I do think that there's something so I don't know, like mysterious about that image, that hopefully people will see it as something that's more general than something that's like by a bunch of, because we're not jocks. I remember the worst thing that people used to call us in the day was they'd say, oh, they're a bunch of frat boys. I'm like, bro, you do not know. We're like the farthest thing from frat boys that there are. I went to Sarah Lawrence, and even which is the artsiest school in America, and even that was too much. I had to drop out after one semester. Come on. Sorry, do I sound defensive?
Not at all. Not at all. This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras talking to Rhett Miller of the Old 97s. They have a new album called 12th, appropriately named, as it is the band's 12th album. Old 97s have been together for almost 25 years. Do I have that right?
27 years.
27 years.
Yeah.
And you've been putting out music consistently since you started. No big, long breaks, and most notably, no lineup changes. What do you attribute that stability to?
I think being in a band that lasts for decades, and it's a pretty rare thing, especially if you don't have big money-making hits where you're not beholden to some, company-sized group of people whose job it is to milk the catalog. A band like ours that has done well enough to, you know, raise multiple kids in all four of our families, and, we're like middle-class musicians, and that's a pretty rare thing these days. But so to make that work and to keep it going for a long time is a pretty tricky thing, but it can really just be boiled down to, like a marriage, you listen, you let the other person win sometimes, or just don't even let it become a battle to begin with. I mean, these are all things that took so long for me to figure out. It was probably 15 years into our band before I let go of some of my more controlling instincts, I remember I used to get mad at the guys when, there's two of you wearing plaid shirts. We can't walk out on stage with two different people wearing plaid shirts in one band. What are you doing? And I just let it go. You know what? They are human beings with their own agency, and they're going to do what they're going to do. And the more I try to control them, the more they're angrier they're going to get. So it's a long learning experience. And I don't have it 100% down. I learn things all the time. We still encounter road bumps when I'm away from them for too long, which actually right now I'm really feeling it. I miss them. I miss making music with them. I miss performing with them. I miss playing them my newest songs. I miss hearing their dumb jokes and getting their unexpected feedback. I never know what they're going to say. And I love it because it's always something good. It's always something I don't always agree, but it's always something that helps me figure out what I think better.
This is World Cafe. I'm Raina Duras. I'm speaking to Rhett Miller of the Old 97s today on World Cafe about their new album, 12th. You're playing a bunch of new songs for us today, but you're also treating us to one from way back at the beginning, from your 1996 major label debut, Too Far to Care. Out of your huge catalog, why did you want to play Barrier Reef for us today?
A common question when you run into, a stranger or a fan, or like, say, some kind of like my wife's cousin or something, a common question from a non-musician is, what's the best song you've ever written? What's your favorite song you've ever written? And that's just an insane question for me to have to answer, because I'm at 1,200 recorded songs or something now. Not to brag, but it's a lot. It's usually my favorite song is usually the most recent song that I just wrote, or right now, Turn Off the TV is doing well at radio. So I love that song, because what if something really happens and it breaks through and then my kids get to grow up, with some security? But those are all things I can't really explain to them. So I go back to what song, when I perform it in front of a big group of people who aren't afraid to congregate in close proximity and sing at the top of their lungs, what song inspires the most singing along? And this is probably the one that does the most. For fans of mine and fans of ours, whenever I go, especially on a solo show, I put this song usually towards the end of the set, and I will start singing it, and then I'll kind of back away from the mic and sing it a little bit at a remove, and I'll let the audience be a part of it, and we sing it together usually. And it's incredibly moving to me. I mean, I'm not going to again say about getting choked up, but I might get a little choked up here and there when the audience is all singing back these words that I remember distinctly writing in 1995, driving around in a van full of my bandmates. And here I am, a man on the brink of turning 50 years old, And this song still lives on with a life of its own and connects with people in a way where it's become a part of their life too. It's really moving to me.
Well, we are in front of a virtual live audience, so if everyone sings along loud enough, maybe somehow we'll hear each other. We're going to hear Rhett Miller play Barrier Reef now on World Cafe.
The empty bottle was half empty, tide was low, and I was thirsty. I saw her sitting at the bar. Well, you know how some girls are always making eyes. Well, she wasn't making eyes. So I sidled up beside her, settled down, and shouted, "Hi there, my name's Stuart Ransom Miller. I'm a serial lady killer." She said, "I'm already dead," and that's exactly what she said. So we tripped the lights, fantastic. We was both made of elastic. Midnight came, and midnight went, and I thought I was the president. She said, "Do you have a car?" And I said, "Do I have a car?" What's so great about the Barrier Reef? What's so fine about art? What's so good about a good times band? When you're working on a broken, working on a broken, working on a broken man. Working on a broken, working on a broken, working on a broken man. Oh yeah. My heart wasn't in it, not for one single minute. But I went through the motions with her, her on top and me on liquor. Didn't do no good, but I didn't think it would. What's so great about the Barrier Reef? What's so fine about art? Oh, and what's so good about a good times band? When you're working on a broken, working on a broken, working on a broken man. When you're working on a broken, working on a broken, working on a broken man. When you're working on a broken, working on a broken, working on a broken man. Oh yeah!
Rhett Miller of Old 97s performing that live in front of a virtual audience on World Cafe. The song is called Barrier Reef. That one is from the Old 97s 1996 album, Too Far to Care. Rhett Miller is my guest on the show today. It's been about 24 years since you put that song out. Things have changed a lot. And Rhett, I wanted to say congratulations. I know this summer marks your anniversary of being 5 years sober.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, I read about 6 years ago after your album Most Messed Up, you made that decision. But it sounds like you didn't hit this, you know, terrifying rock bottom like a lot of people do before they decide to get sober. What was the turning point for you?
It's funny. My friend Kyle Kinane is a comedian from Chicago, and he just released a new album called Trampoline in a Ditch. And it's so funny. And but he has he's not sober, but he has a big bit about the relativity of rock bottom, because some people will describe their rock bottom and it's just way beyond anything that you could imagine. You know, for me, I was watching my kids enter into pre-adolescence and adolescence, and I just knew that I wanted to be there for them, like present, and I knew that with the way I was kind of living my life, that wasn't going to work. And, you know, everybody's story is different. Everybody that winds up wanting to get sober and eventually being successful at it, comes from a different place. I feel lucky that I was able to get over the hump. If it's something that is that would work for you, would work better than, that's something they say. I didn't do a ton of AA, but one thing they say in AA is it wasn't working for me. And so that stuck with me. Like, it wasn't working for me. And now I really love it. I used to feel so sorry for anyone that had to stop drinking or didn't get to drink. I used to be like, oh my God, you must have had some really horrible things happen. And now your life is just so sad and boring. I feel so bad for you. But it's weird because once you get to the other side, you're like, oh my God, this is way better. It's like, I get to be sober. This is actually great. So some people are able to do moderation. I wasn't as much. So I love it. It's taken a while to kind of figure out how to do what I do as a sober person, because I'm in bars every night. And it took a while for people to stop just placing whiskeys at the base of my microphone. I would look down and it would be like this little tiny ocean of whiskey spreading out around me. But it's been really great. And I've never regretted it.
And you've had some friends to lean on, too, during all of this. You know, you turned to Jason Isbell for advice. What did he tell you?
No, he's such an inspiration in general. I really love the way he approaches life, music. He's a great dad now. It seems like he and Amanda have such a great marriage. You know, I love the way he deals with social media. I just think he's so funny on there, but he doesn't take it too seriously. There's a lot to look up to with Jason. And I knew him from back when he was a freaking disaster. And I'm just so proud of him. But so, yeah, I remember reaching out to him, just sort of asking, what is the way forward? Is there a way forward? And him telling me like, oh, yes, you don't know it now, but there's a way forward. And then once I had finally gotten to the other side, oh, my God, how am I supposed to talk about this? It just feels so like, oh, it's not something I don't want this to be my narrative. Like, I don't want to have to every single time I talk in front of people talk about it. It's so depressing and embarrassing. There's a lot of shame, I guess, that goes into it to getting to this place. And he made the point. And this is something that I've also come to believe about my own experience as someone who survived a suicide attempt when I was really young. He made the point, if you talk about something, you're going to help someone, even if it's just one person. And so, you know, like since in the last 10 years, I decided I would just be really open about my own experiences with, you know, and struggles with mental health and with suicide. And it's something that should be destigmatized. The more you can talk about it, the easier it is to cope with. And so same thing with sobriety. I'm not ashamed. I'm happy to be where I am. And if by talking about it, I can help a person here or there, I would take that even if it means making another person here or there feel uncomfortable. So, you know, I'll do it.
It's interesting because I think the topic of sobriety has come up with many people I've talked to on this show. And one common thread that seems to run through a lot of it is this fear that getting sober might affect your creativity. Was that something that was on your mind?
Oh my God. My whole creative persona has been a drunk, you know, like whenever kids, any kids, eventually my kids, but even before that, other people's kids would be at the shows or wind up somewhere where I had to sing songs. I have to tell them, these songs are about people who make poor decisions. You know, these songs are also about me. So I'm a person who's making poor decisions. Like, so yeah, it's a weird thing. Like on any given night, I'll look down at my set list and the names of the songs. Cause you know, you just put one word on a set list. You don't write out the whole name of the song. Although in the case of the songs I'm going to mention, their names were one word. I'll look down and the song will be Wasted, Stoned. You know, it's like just one right after the other. It's these, like it's a chronicle of a life led to the darkest corners of debauchery. And I have lived to tell the tale and I've lived to sing those songs. And now when I sing them, it's funny because it's like a time machine. I get to go back to those times where it was just so wheels off in my life. It was like just spinning out of control. And there was something fun about it. Like, if you survive it and you get to the other side, you can look back and say, oh man, I had a great time, but it wasn't going to last. So it's nice to revisit those days, like as a, like a day on a day pass, as it were.
I mean, and you've written lots of songs since getting sober. So obviously you found your muse and you were able to still be creative. Did you, were there any strategies that you found you had to be like, oh, I need to think of something to write about? Usually right now I might have a drink and loosen up. Did you ever face any moments like that where you were like, okay, how do I get through writing an actual song now?
Well, I did. I faced about 2 years worth of moments like that. And what I did was, and I would recommend this to anyone, even if it's not specifically about songwriting, go to your friends. There's a reason they're your friends. Maybe not the friends who want to take you by the hand and lead you down the darker alleys, but the friends who really love you and see the light in you. So during those times when I was trying to find my voice again, and trying to stop lying to myself that the only value I had as a songwriter was someone whose job it was to chronicle, you know, spiraling into despair or drunkenness, I went and I wrote a song with Ben Queller. I wrote a song with Nicole Atkins and Butch Walker and these people that they're, you know, not necessarily sober people, even just people that I knew that I cared about, that cared about me. And that way I was able to write a song where it wasn't all on me. I was able to, maybe if there was something weird in there, I could blame it on them. Like, oh, that was all Nicole Atkins. Sorry, that wasn't me. I would never do that or say that. But it took some of the pressure off me, and I felt like I was in a safe place. But eventually, I knew that I would have to write songs all by myself, that I had to answer for and stand behind and sing on stage without being able to point the finger at anyone else. And this record is 100% those songs.
I'm talking to Rhett Miller of the Old 97s on Roll Cafe. We have one more song you're going to perform to us for us today. It's the opening track of your new album. It's such a fun one. What can you tell us about The Dropouts before we hear it?
Well, you won't hear this when I play it for you right now. You'll hear what it sounded like when I wrote it. But when the Old 97s recorded it, it was a dream coming true. Because when I wrote it, I had this vision of Adam and the Ants had this record, Kings of the Wild Frontier. And Adam Ant did a lot of stuff. But this record was really a distillation of what he was good at and his guitar player, Marco Peroni, who produced it. These guys, there was this one moment in the late 70s where they were combining tribal drums with this kind of chanting, big fat Telecaster or hollow body guitar sounding riffs. So I texted the guys when I wrote the song, because of course we have a band text chain. And I said, I just wrote an Adam and the Ants song. And they were like, okay, whatever, Rhett. But man, they made it come to life. And Philip, our drummer, when he recorded this overdub track of him playing these giant floor toms, and it's just, oh, I knew it as soon as I heard those floor toms. This is the first song on the record. I want this to be the first thing anybody hears on our new record. And it's so good.
We are going to hear, let's listen to a clip of the album version, just so we can hear about all of those pieces of instrumentation that you're talking about. This is The Dropouts. That was The Dropouts from the Old 97s. That's from the album. And now we're going to hear Rhett Miller play the version that I guess sounds like how it all started, this song, The Dropouts. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, but I know that you just set it up so professionally. You're such
That's
a...
okay.
Which, by the way, I don't want this interview to end without me telling you congratulations on the great job you're doing as the host of World Cafe. This is
Thank
great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That
means
a lot. I
mean, it's such a storied post. David Dye is one of my heroes. I thought Thalia did a great job, but I've been so gratified seeing the way that you are carrying on the tradition and killing it.
Oh, that means so much to me, right? Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Oh, but so, when I wrote these songs, they just sound like folk songs. It's so funny. They just sound like these little folk songs. And in fact, this one, I finished it. The actor, Rainn Wilson, who played Dwight on The Office.
I noticed he had a thank you in the album credits. And I was like, what? Where did that come from?
I could have made a whole separate list of thank yous just for Rain, because he and his wife, Holiday Reinhorn, own a cabin in Central Oregon. And I had a few days off in a West Coast tour. And I'd spoken to Rain, and he said, you've got to go to my cabin and write songs there. It's magical. And I thought, well, that seems like a pretty far way out of the way for me to go. But he talked me into it, and damn if he wasn't right, because I went there and I finished, I don't know, 9 of the 12 songs on this album were finished in Rain and Holiday's cabin, including, I remember specifically, this one. I was so inspired writing this song in Rain's cabin. So it sounded like a folk song when I wrote it, but my band turned it into that rock song you just heard.
Well, we're going to hear it kind of how you would have heard it in Rain Wilson's cabin then, I guess, right now. This is Rhett Miller with The Dropouts on World Cafe.
Dropouts paid in alcohol. Late night long shots at the bar. Waiting and waiting and waiting on a phone call. My one true love is this cheap guitar. Hey, everybody flying in a harmony rocket. Everybody sleeping on a hardwood floor. You got $2 bills in your pocket. You got no idea when you'll get more. But that's all right. It's going down, downtown. We got nothing, but nothing's good enough for the dropouts. Oh, yeah. Buildings made of bricks and mortar. Mockingbirds up in the sky. Man, I hated going to high school. All I wanted was to learn how to fly. But that's alright. Turns out you don't need wings when you've got whiskey and guitar strings. About midnight, oh, we gon' get real loud. We got nothing, but nothing's good enough for the dropouts. In a parallel universe, everybody's wasted. In another life where we all live. In the straight world, everybody thinks we've lost it. Oh, but we all see what a joke it is. I know you, even if I don't know your name. The real world can be really lame. You gotta make your own sunshine when you're underground. We got nothing but nothing, 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 nothing's good enough for the dropouts. Oh yeah, we're the dropouts. Oh, we're the dropouts.
That was The Dropouts, song from the old 97's new album, 12th. You just heard it performed live in front of a virtual audience by the old 97's Rhett Miller for World Cafe. Rhett Miller has been my guest today. Thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
This is great, Raina. Thank you so much.
I really loved it. I'm Raina Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe.